It's Friday, May 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. Deputy Attorney General briefs members of Congress on the Trump-Russia investigation. India approves the construction of new nuclear reactors, and a famous Hollywood landmark celebrates its 90th anniversary. It's all ahead. Republican Congressman Daryl Issa said he's pleased former FBI Director Robert Mueller will have the latitude to pursue all leads as he heads an independent Justice Department investigation into possible collusion between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the Russians. Issa and other members of the House of Representatives received that assurance from Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein during a closed-door briefing Friday on Capitol Hill about his appointment of Mueller to lead the investigation. Issa spoke to reporters following the briefing.
I do believe that there was great consensus that going after the Russians for interfering with our election is a nonpartisan or bipartisan issue, one that both sides need to get resolved before the next election, not just as to what they did, but how to prevent it.
VOA House of Representatives correspondent Catherine Gibson describes the comments of the members after the briefing.
They came out of this briefing almost uniformly saying that the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, would be a good first step in what's been a really chaotic week on Capitol Hill, where we were just hit by wave after wave of these revelations about President Trump's dealings with Russia and what possibly may have happened in his campaign and in the first days of his administration. So I think there was a sense of relief from some of the House members to get this briefing, to get a sense of what the special counsel would be doing, and to look at the next steps moving forward.
Do they know what the parameters are of this particular investigation?
They do. He's actually been given wide latitude to be able to research and look into whatever issues he needs to do. Now, some of the House members that I spoke to said that it can be dangerous with a special counsel in those kinds of terms. A special counsel will go in there and want to turn over every rock, find every bit of evidence, and look for ways to charge people. But I think that in terms of Robert Mueller, he's very well respected up on Capitol Hill. He was always thought of as a very good, very wise FBI director who will really take the right approach to this very difficult, very complicated investigation.
Well, this almost sounds like it's bipartisan feeling of goodwill. I mean, are
as much as it can be on Capitol Hill.
Well, really,
slow down.
But I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know. At least from what I've heard so far, both parties seem to agree at least with this formation and how it's going.
That's right. Now, I think where the story goes next in terms of Capitol Hill is that there is some concern beginning to come out among the members of the congressional committees that are also looking into Russian election interference. We, of course, have a House Oversight Committee investigation. We have the long-embattled House Intelligence Committee investigation. And a couple of the members I've spoken to are saying that they want those investigations to still go on, that Congress still plays a key role in looking at the bigger picture questions that have been raised here. And that's the threat to our democracy and the threat to future elections if other countries can come in and meddle in them.
What about looking forward, Catherine, about the FBI? James Comey, of course, was fired by President Trump.
That's right.
What kind of leadership might be placed in that job?
Well, as we were all waiting outside that all-House members classified briefing, we were hearing that Joe Lieberman might possibly be President Trump's pick for the next FBI director. And, you know, talking to some of the House members, there was mixed reaction to that news. I think, you know, Joe Lieberman is very well respected. He's certainly well known on Capitol Hill. But there was some sense that after all of the political back and forth, especially over this past week, that we really need somebody with a Justice Department background background, not from a political background like Joe Lieberman, to really step into that FBI director position and provide an independent perspective. So while Lieberman will be a good choice, he might not be the right choice for this moment in time in terms of the political reality in Washington, D.C. right now.
Well, it seemed from what I saw that that was a moment of a bit of a partisan divide, that Republicans seem to like him more than Democrats.
Absolutely. You know, Republicans are still standing in, by the most part, behind President Donald Trump. We saw a few defections over the course of this week, but they will support whomever he picks for that position of FBI director. Well, we'll all have some trouble on the Democratic side, given that they're raising a lot of questions about President Trump's judgment this week.
That's VOA House of Representatives correspondent Catherine Gibson. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Oh, well, there's a lot of talk about politics here in the U.S. There's also a lot of talk about President Trump's first trip overseas as president. He'll be going to Saudi Arabia, Israel, the Vatican, and then Belgium for a NATO summit and Italy for the G7 summit. So lots of talk about that on social media, particularly some of the details of this trip. Lots of talk that First Lady Melania Trump will be accompanying the president on this trip. And in particular notice for in Saudi Arabia, there's one event being held with country music singer Toby Keith performing at a men's-only concert. Of course, Saudi Arabia known as being very gender segregated. A lot of people on social media thought that was a joke and didn't realize it was an actual concert that is happening. Another nugget of information that people thought was a joke, but the Associated Press is reporting that along with the local food that President Trump will be eating in Saudi Arabia, he'll be given steak with a side of ketchup, which is his favorite meal, in an effort to try to keep things consistent and keep him happy while he's traveling. And then this bit of information actually came out earlier this week from H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, during his press conference talking about President Trump sharing information with Russia's foreign minister and ambassador. He said that the president looks forward to participating in a Twitter forum with young people while he's in Saudi Arabia. I saw multiple tweets where people said, what could possibly go wrong participating in a Twitter forum in Saudi Arabia? But others saying that it is a new way to embrace people around the world, to reach out to people around the world. And certainly if there's one thing that President Trump has shown, it's that he is an avid Twitter user. So perhaps not surprising that he would choose to have a Twitter town hall as he makes his travels overseas.
Absolutely. It sounds like it'll be fascinating.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I was telling our colleague Jim Malone, I don't know if it's going to be very early in the morning or very late at night, but I will be up to watch that Twitter town hall. I think it's going to be very interesting.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Iran's President Rouhani could face a challenge in his re-election bid. A report says corruption in the Nigerian military benefits Boko Haram. Former New York Congressman Anthony Weider pleads guilty in a sexting scandal. And the UN human rights chief will meet the lawyer of a Venezuelan opposition figure. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers recently discovered an asteroid that is traveling in an orbit that is the exact opposite of 99.9% of all the planets and asteroids in our solar system. Jupiter shares its orbital path with 6,000 asteroids called Trojan asteroids. All are rotating in the same direction. The Wrong Way asteroid, dubbed 2015 BZ509, or just BZ for short, also shares Jupiter's orbit too, but it travels in an orbit like a car going down the wrong way of a busy one-way street. You would think that BZ would have been smashed to bits by now by the solar system's largest planet. But a new study shows the wayward rock has been able to safely maintain its odd travel path thanks to Jupiter's gravitational influence, which helps it to weave in and out of danger's way. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear some reviews about new films that are in the theaters this weekend. The Indian cabinet of Prime Minister Narendra Modi this week approved plans to build 10 domestically built nuclear reactors with a combined capacity of 7,000 megawatts that would double the South Asian country's current capacity. It currently has 22 reactors. It's part of Mr. Modi's emphasis on local Make It India manufacturing. The project is expected to generate more than 30,000 jobs. The decision is also part of India's drive to increase renewable power generation, including solar power, by the year 2022. IHS Global Insight Chief Economist Rajiv Biswas tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, this is a major step for India, one of the world's largest consumers of electrical power.
India currently only has 2% of its energy produced by nuclear power. And so basically what it will do if all of these nuclear reactors are built is it would double India's nuclear capacity. But in context, if we look at plans for renewable energy, for example, India plans to add 100,000 megawatts of solar power by 2022, whereas this decision for 10 nuclear reactors will only generate 7,000 megawatts. So you can see relatively, India is still looking to other sources of energy as really being the major drivers of its additional power generating capacity over the next decade.
But it seems to be going against the trend in Asia and elsewhere, given what happened in Japan with the Fukushima disaster.
Many countries in Asia are struggling to implement nuclear power projects, mainly because of domestic grassroots opposition. That's been very apparent in Japan, where although the government wanted to pursue nuclear power startups from the previously shut down reactors, public protests were very severe. And India also has faced considerable grassroots protests against some nuclear power projects. Recently, there were plans to develop a project in Maharashtra, which was going to use a French nuclear technology, but that, again, was heavily protested against. And similarly, plans for Russia technology power projects, nuclear power in Tamil Nadu, also faced severe opposition. So although the government has plans to implement these power projects, whether it can actually be implemented and also what time frame it could take because of the public opposition could be considerable. So it's far from clear at this stage that these projects can actually be implemented anytime soon because of the fierce public opposition to nuclear power that's evident in many parts of India and also, as you say, more widely across Asia.
That's IHS Global Insight Chief Economist Rajiv Biswas. Well, the weekend is fast approaching, and the summertime movies are a mixed bag of science fiction, drama, and comedy. VOA's Lori London talks to Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard, who has reviews on two of the big ones to hit theaters, including the new Aliens movie.
Yes, Alien Covenant. And I have been an Alien fan my whole life, especially, you know, when 1979, I was, to get this story, you ready, Lori? I was 12 years old in Sunday school, and some of the older kids are like, we're ditching Sunday school and we're going to see this movie called Alien. I'm like, really? So we ditch Sunday school and we drive over there to see it. It was a hot July day. It was freezing in the theater. And anyone who's ever seen Alien knows that just for the first time, you never forget something like that, especially back then. It was a genre that just set everything on its ear, and just everybody copied it from, you know, from that day forward. And of course, Ridley Scott's the original director, and he's back now. He directed Prometheus, which was a couple of years ago, and the alien was at the end of the movie, and that was a really intriguing science fiction. Well, this movie, Alien Covenant, is the sequel to Prometheus, but it's the prequel to Alien, the 1979 version, so kind of follow me there. And so they go back to this planet, and this time it's more alien-oriented, unlike Prometheus, where it was more about the origins of man, you know, this alien race that was kind of populating the Earth, and there was all kinds of really great philosophical questions. This time around, we do have philosophical questions again, but this time we have a lot more action and a lot more sci-fi horror. And, this, you know, you have Michael Fassbender, who plays a synthetic alien in this movie. He played David in the Prometheus. Now he plays Walter in this version, and he meets himself. So he plays, you know, two different roles, but it's the same actor. So brilliant, brilliant performance. Billy Crudup also plays the captain of the ship. He played a great performance. And my favorite comedian is Danny McBride, and he plays the pilot of the ship, but he's not comedic in this role. He really shows a dramatic side, which really surprised me. So don't make any mistake. This is definitely a horror film, suspenseful, hardcore science fiction. You know, the chest burster, we've seen that a million times. You think to yourself, well, I'm used to that. Well, director Ridley Scott comes with a whole new way to keep on freaking you out with that chest burster. So Alien Covenant is just brilliant science fiction, and he uses full-size sets, which is so incredible. Hallways, cockpits, the ships and everything. Very little CGI. Even the alien most of the time is a man in a costume, and it really gives a realism to it that's just unparalleled.
All right. Well, if people are not into the whole alien sci-fi thing, we've got another one with quite a few big names, with Amy Schumer, Goldie Hawn, and hilarious Wanda Sykes.
Yes, it's called Snatched. And it's called Snatch because they are kidnapped during the movie. And just setting it up quickly, Amy Schumer is going down to Ecuador to this really luxury vacation with her boyfriend. Boyfriend dumps her. She has no one to go with. None of her friends really like her. So she hits up her estranged mom, played by Goldie Hawn, who never leaves the house, gets her to go to Ecuador with her. They're at the place having Mai Tais and margaritas and having a good time. But, of course, as they travel out with the guy they met, thinking, you know, this handsome young local, they're kidnapped for ransom. So now they're stuck in the Amazon jungle, and most of the movie they're trying to get to safety. So you can imagine the pitch meeting for this movie. It isn't funny. And Amy Schumer is vulgar. Goldie Hawn is vulgar. The movie is so implausible. It's not funny. It was one of the worst times I've had all year. No one was laughing in the theater, and it's just a really bad buddy film from the late 1990s. She needs a new direction and a new shot in the arm, because this movie was terrible.
All right, that's Las Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. One of the most glamorous and longest-lasting venues from Hollywood's golden age, Grauman's Chinese Theater in Los Angeles, is celebrating its 90th birthday. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, there's a lot more to the movie palace than just stars' footprints in cement.
One of the indications of success in Hollywood is to be invited to impress your handprint in the cement of Sid Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Sid Grauman opened what is now known as the TCL Chinese Theater on May 18, 1927. That was 2 years before the first Academy Awards were handed out. Through the decades, a galaxy of Hollywood stars have appeared on its screen and in the cement in front of the building. King Kong premiered there. So did The Wizard of Oz in 1939. George Lucas brought R2-D2 and C-3PO along for the premiere of Star Wars in 1977. Purple Rain had its premiere there, as did Titanic and Avatar. Levi Tinker is the current general manager of the Movie Palace.
It is actually the only single-screen theater in the country to be open 9 decades, completely as a first-run movie theater from the time it opened its doors through today, and continuously showing first-run movies on a daily basis.
The theater looks like a Chinese temple with marble carvings, a pagoda-shaped roof, and two huge Heaven's Dogs sculptures out front. Levi Tinker says Sid Grauman wanted to give audiences an escape, a place to get away from the real world and submerge themselves in the fantasies of the movies.
So he spared no expense in getting the best artists, best designers, and even importing elements from China. He had to get permission from the Chinese government and U.S. government to bring over the two Heaven's Dogs out in front of the theater in our courtyard. The artwork in the main lobby area was hand-painted back in 1927 by Key Luke, who was a painter but also an actor as well, too.
You know them well, of course. Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell. Here they are at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood to sign their names and print their hands and feet in concrete.
The theater is also known for its forecourt, where the glittering stars of Hollywood have left their hand and foot and hoof and leg and hair, in some cases, prints. The tradition started when silent film star Norma Talmadge was walking through the court and stepped in wet cement. Sid Grauman saw it and thought it was a great promotional gimmick. Grauman's has also been the site of innovation through the decades with early attempts at widescreen projection, the first 70mm films, the first CinemaScope, and the first digital projection. The theater is also the site of the premiere of the Ridley Scott-directed space thriller Alien Covenant. Scott says that the Chinese theater is a true treasure.
It's the history. You know, Hollywood is, whichever way you look at it, think about it, it's, you know, the most important place for movies in the world. That's it.
Actor Michael Fassbender agrees.
Yeah, I mean, in general, sort of Hollywood and this whole area is, it's got the history. It's, I mean, it's sort of the beginning of film.
The city of Los Angeles has designated the theater as a historic cultural monument, and the auditorium underwent the largest renovation in its history 4 years ago to make room for stadium seating and an IMAX screen. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Arctic region is warming faster than any other region on Earth, more than twice the rate of the global average, according to recent reports. This means, among other things, that areas of the Arctic Ocean that were formerly inaccessible to humans are opening up for increased human traffic. But the warming of the Arctic raises the risks for fragile land and marine ecosystems, which must be managed through a balanced approach, lest they become damaged beyond recovery. This is where the Arctic Council comes in, a high-level forum of the 8 nations with territory in the region and representatives of indigenous peoples who live in the region. The biennial Arctic Council ministerial meeting gives Arctic nations and peoples a forum in which to address these concerns, balancing the protection of the Arctic's fragile environment with responsible, sustainable development. On May 10th and 11th in Fairbanks, Alaska, the Council held its 10th ministerial meeting, which marked the conclusion of the 2-year U.S. chairmanship of this body. Under U.S. leadership, the Council completed an assessment of the telecommunications infrastructure in the Arctic, launched a new Arctic ship traffic database to keep track of vessels passing through the Arctic, and implemented 2 agreements signed by Council members during the last meeting, one on improving search and rescue in the Arctic region and the second on preparing and responding to potential oil pollution incidents in the Arctic. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the other foreign ministers also signed 2 documents at the Fairbanks Ministerial, a binding agreement that will promote scientific cooperation throughout the Arctic, and the Fairbanks Declaration, a non-binding statement that affirms the signatories' commitment to maintain peace, stability, and constructive cooperation in the Arctic, promotes the economic development of indigenous peoples there, and recognizes that climate change is a serious threat to the Arctic and calls for timely action to address this threat. The United States had been privileged to lead the Arctic Council at a time when the Arctic region has been facing unprecedented change and challenges, said Secretary Tillerson, who hosted the meeting as chair of the Arctic Council. The Arctic Council has proven to be an indispensable forum in which we can pursue cooperation. I want to affirm that the United States will continue to be an active member in this council. The opportunity to chair the council has only strengthened our commitment to continuing its work in the future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.